Appropriation Committee hearings. What we've been doing is we'd like to have you give a general overview of, from your perspective, how things are going on in your arena, anything out there that you're seeing unusual, good, bad, indifferent, whatever, just the general comments. And we may ask questions, and if something is happening while you're talking, we'll probably interrupt while it's on our mind. After we've done that, then we'd like to have you go through the budget page by page and discuss things. And I know there was some confusion over an issue with an employee, and you can address that on the front end or when we get to it in your budget, however you'd like to do that. With that, welcome. Good morning. It's glad to have you here. The floor is yours, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Scott Homar, District Attorney, 1st Judicial District, here in Laramie County, Wyoming. Good morning, everyone, bright and early. I know I appreciate you all being here for me this morning. Yes, Mr. Chairman, with regard to what's going on in Laramie County, for the most part, I think we've got a decent handle on things here. The issues that we're seeing for the most part are in the misdemeanor arena and in the domestic violence arena. Particularly the domestic violence arena, the statistics over the last few years have shown that in Laramie County, we're almost double that of Natrona County. Now, I don't, you know, that's probably a factor of many things, including some very significant enforcement techniques that we use here in Cheyenne. We've given the police department and the sheriff's office a lot of training in this area. We have actually assisted by sending them to some schools to where they are able to recognize and deal with domestic violence. So I think that's probably a big part of it with regard to the enforcement. But there is a tremendous amount of cases. There are a tremendous amount of cases in our office right now. I do have one full-time attorney that is a grant attorney. I have a half-time attorney that's also a grant attorney doing nothing but domestic violence cases. And then I have.
You talk about a large amount, Scott. What is a large amount? Break it down, like, I mean, total, and then how many you would see in a day or a week?
Well, total, and this is, I think, 2012 numbers because I haven't got 2013 numbers yet. We had just a little over 800 cases of domestic violence in Cheyenne, whereas Casper had not quite 500, as I understand it. So you break that down over the course of a year, and that's a lot in a week. And we also have a lot of, and those aren't all misdemeanors, there are a lot of felonies that go along with that, particularly with the new strangulation law and aggravated assaults on women as well. So as we sit right now, I think we have a pretty good handle on it. We do have approximately 80 felonies in my office right now, and I would say in the neighborhood of 200 misdemeanors that are active and open at this point in time that are DV cases. As you know, those tend to go 5-6 months out, so they kind of run that way. Misdemeanors in general, including traffic and all other misdemeanors, misdemeanor theft, property destruction, every other type of misdemeanor that we have, was being handled by 1 3/4 attorneys in my office. That's one of the things we'll talk about here in a little bit as to the full-time attorney that I temporarily have and I'm hoping to have for the 15-16 budget. But really, those are the two areas. We do have, and I think this is kind of statewide, a lot more child sexual assault cases than we'd like to see, but I have two very good attorneys working those cases in my office, and we're staying on top of those as well. So other than that, I think my office is handling,
Mr. Chairman,
the case as well.
Senator Hastert?
Yeah, thanks. Scott, you said that, did I get the number right, 800 domestic violence in 2012 in Laramie County? Did you know what you said?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hastert, yes, that's
okay.
Correct. A little over 800.
You had right now 80 felonies that you have, that you're working, and is there a way to put a number to any of those, to how many of those are domestic violence related?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, Senator Hastert, 80 felony domestic violence cases.
Oh,
open.
80, I'm sorry. Oh, so 80 felony are domestic violence cases. Okay.
Yes,
thank
we
you.
We probably have approximately 300 to 350 open felony cases in my office right now.
Any other questions, committee? Continue, please.
Thank you. I think that addresses really the concerns of Laramie County at this point in time. We are, I guess I should mention this, with the new laws in Colorado, we are starting to see some increase in marijuana possession in Laramie County. Hopefully those folks crossing the border will get the message that it's still illegal up here, and we're dealing with them accordingly. So with that, I think I would like to go through the budget, Mr. Chairman, and then we'll address that one issue following that.
Okay. Any other questions in general before we get into the budget committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dockstader.
Just quickly before we leave that number 800, and you probably weren't in the office then, but in a comparison 5 to 10 years ago, what kind of jump have we seen in domestic violence? 800 cases in 1 year?
Scott?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dockstader, 800 cases in 1 year. Now, those are DCI numbers of arrests for domestic violence. May not be convictions, but those are cases that we have to deal with. As far as 5 years ago, those numbers have gone up. I don't remember the numbers exactly from 5, 6 years ago. I could certainly go back and look at those. From the DCI numbers, I know they have gone up, but again, I think that's kind of relative to our and my office's take on domestic violence and the way that we enforce it and the way that we have helped train law enforcement to deal with it. It's probably more of an enforcement issue that we're up that high because we're doing those cases, we're arresting on those cases, and we're prosecuting those cases.
And Representative Nicholas and Senator Perkins will be doing your budget, Scott. I have a general question, and we had quite an afternoon yesterday with the Attorney General's office, and most of it was, or not most of it, a lot of it was DCI. And one of the times we have those TFOs, I believe they're called, where we've been using ARRA funds in the past, and now they've come back with a substantial exception budget request. Tell me about the relationship you see with DCI and those TFOs and how important you think they are or what they do and contribute to what you're trying to do in your position.
If you would explain TFO, Mr. Chairman.
I think that's task force officers. It's the DCI guys around the state to deal with meth and other issues.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The task force that we deal with for the most part is the SEAT team, the Southeast Enforcement Team. I know that there have been some budget cuts to those guys with regard to how it affects my office. It was quite interesting. You know, we do have a HIDA attorney. That's the high-intensity drug trafficking area attorney.
We talked about that one, too.
We have one of those attorneys in my office as well as a legal assistant paid for with the federal grant funds that do nothing but felony drug cases. This person is cross-designated to prosecute in both state and federal court as an assistant U.S. attorney. In talking with him, he was very, very busy last year, the year before. And when it seemed like the budget cuts, the budget cuts came in, that he became quite a bit less busy. They were not able to go out, do overtime work to do this drug enforcement. As you know, for the most part, individuals involved in the drug world don't operate 8 to 5, generally. These guys do a lot of paperwork during those hours, but their real enforcement is after hours and deep into the night, generally. When they were unable to do that due to the budget cuts, we saw quite a large drop in our cases coming in.
Yeah, and Scott, that's that balance you try to achieve between, if you really wanted to do it, you'd have 100 of them. But where do you find the balance between responsible spending of taxpayers' dollars and yet taking care of and protecting the citizens. And I guess, and that's a hard thing to really quantify, but what you're saying is you thought that those reductions by the case, the cases were less, and you could see the impact of it. What about the, this is hard to ask, what about the impact to the people? Do you think there was less protection out there and the thing was starting to get rampant, or do you think it was still a pretty good balance?
You know, with regard to protection of the people, Mr. Chairman, certainly when there are more drugs on the street, things become more dangerous. When you're not able to take down these large drug organizations, large for Laramie County, I think things do become more dangerous. I can tell you just in the last couple of weeks, we've seen two meth labs, and I haven't seen a meth lab in 3 or 4 years. Most of the meth is coming across the border and has been for quite some time. Meth labs dropped to almost zero for quite some period of time, and now we're starting to see meth labs again in homes and around kids. So,
and the other thing, too, is you know, DCI really is the genesis of going after that more than like the local, you know, Cheyenne police or your sheriff would do. So they're really spearheading the drug effort, aren't they?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and these meth labs that we did find were just happenstance, so we just happened to find them due to other law enforcement issues that were going on at the time. Obviously, DCI and the SEAT drug task force and all the task force across the state deal with that on a whole different level. You know, they get the users, they get the little sellers, and then they're able to go up the chain till they can find these people that have the meth labs or find the people that are importing these drugs. And it is a little concerning that if they don't have the money to continue to do that, that those people will continue to operate.
Okay. Any other questions, committee? Representative Escobel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With all this that's going on, Scott, what's it doing to our jail capacities?
Scott?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Escobel, I haven't talked to the sheriff about where he is as far as the Laramie County Jail is concerned. I know they're always short-staffed over there and feel like they are at capacity most of the time. I can tell you when it comes to, if we're just talking about the drug defendants, they have to work pretty hard to get in jail or in prison. For the most part, they're not being imprisoned for a first offense. For even a first revocation, maybe not even a second revocation of their probation. So like I said, they have to work pretty hard to get into the prison system if they're in the drug defendants. I don't have those numbers from either Department of Corrections or the Sheriff's Department about defendants that are incarcerated, and they are drug defendants. I don't have that number.
Well, just to follow up, what about the domestic violence cases?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Escobel, domestic violence defendants, we do jail immediately. They are arrested immediately. That's why you see so many arrests in the statistics. Many times they are put out on their own recognizance after their initial appearance. These, however, can be dangerous individuals. We take domestic violence very seriously here. We don't want to see someone that we've dealt with in the system end up as a homicide defendant, nor do we want to see one of the victims we've dealt with end up as a homicide victim. So we do take them very seriously. I would say they are probably incarcerated, at least locally, more often than many.
And, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to bring your attention to one issue, and I had spoken to our local sheriff about it. And it's more of a Department of Corrections issue, but inmates have been, I guess they have access to our local newspapers, and in those blotter briefs where they give the person's name, address, and age, some of the inmates have been sending letters to young ladies
asking to be pen pals and such. And Danny Glick our local sheriff, just started cutting out the blotter briefs from the newspapers so they wouldn't have access to those names and addresses.
Interesting. We'll just leave
it. Sounds like a good idea.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Interested. So if I understood what you said, Scott, that with the training in law enforcement, that's made everybody kind of more attenuated or more attentive to domestic violence. But with the increases, do you see that as a societal increase, or do you just think that's the training so that people are recognizing it and more, or do you think there's actually an uptick in domestic violence in Laramie County?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, I think it's a little bit of both. I think probably the bulk of it is enforcement, but I do believe that for whatever reason, domestic violence in Laramie County is a bit higher than other comparative counties, Natrona County. I don't know the reason for that. I mean, we do have, by we, I mean the criminal justice system, victims groups. There certainly is a public awareness of the issue. You know, you see the signs around town, and so there is certainly an education process out there. One of the big things is, you know, if you hit a woman, lose your guns. I mean, that seems to have somewhat of an impact on people. Certainly, when it comes to prosecution, they go above and beyond on the defense side simply because of the gun issue. Mm-hmm. And would lose their federal gun rights. So I think it's a little bit of both, okay. Senator Perkins.
Just thank you. Mr. Chairman, if I can just keep going on a couple things. Just wondering where you think you are. Well, before I leave that subject, I was wondering, what's your impression of the role that drugs and alcohol play in domestic violence, just from your kind of experience in that area?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, quite frankly, I think it's nearly 100%. You don't find many cases where drugs or alcohol are not involved in a domestic violence case. Certainly there are exceptions, but not many.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, also just going down a couple other areas that I'm just be interested in is, what about, where DUIs in your district, are they on the uptick, are they holding steady, or where do you think DUIs are headed as far as your county?
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, I think we're maintaining, we're being pretty even here in Laramie County. The police department has done a good job. They've really been focusing on DUIs within the city. The sheriff's office and the highway patrol have been doing a good job on the highways and the county roads. I don't see a large uptick. I think we maintain a pretty level, and in fact, I think it went down some just last year from the numbers that I'm seeing in 2013 from 2012.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, another following up on that, and with as far as prosecutions, are there particular challenges that come when, I mean, with alcohol, it's pretty easy. You get the blood, you know, you get the blood or they blow and you stay 0.8. But then as you get the other substances that impair a person for driving, are there particular challenges that you're finding in the non-alcohol cases in prosecuting those cases? In particular, marijuana is one of the ones I'm interested in.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, yes. Obviously, if you don't have a test, it's going to be more difficult. We can get blood tests for people that we believe are under the influence of something. I think we all know the challenges there with the forced blood draws. Some counties are doing them and some counties are not. Our county is doing the forced blood draws. If you don't have a test, it makes it much more difficult. recognizing someone under the influence is really the big issue at this point. We have several what they call DREs, the drug recognition experts, who are in law enforcement here in Laramie County now. They have to go to specialized training and become adept at recognizing different kinds of impairment when alcohol doesn't seem to be a factor. We have one case in particular where we believe the person was under the influence. We have a drug test, but it was done sometime after. There's obviously going to be a battle of the experts as to whether methamphetamine played a role in this particular vehicular homicide. The officers on scene, who are not drug recognition experts, did not notice anything out of the ordinary with this individual. So that's going to be a difficult case.
Okay.
Go ahead. Keep going.
I just got two more, Gary. And so I was just also interested in where do you think, are you seeing any trends with respect to you've talked a little bit about sexual child abuse, but I was wondering about just non-sexual child abuse, just, you know, physical abuse or those types of cases that you're seeing where you have child abuse, but it's not sexual in nature.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, I don't see much of a fluctuation in that. We get maybe one of those a month, maybe less. We get a significant amount more of the child sexual abuse cases.
And thank you. And Mr. Chairman, one final area is I just wonder, you know, and we've had there's been, you know, both in the paper and some individuals expressed to me concerns, at least in my neck of the woods, about rapes and how many rapes there are that go unprosecuted. And I'm wondering if what your experience is in your district with respect to the ability or inability to prosecute, the difficulties or the problems you're having, or if you think there's a significant number of rapes that go unprosecuted in your district.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, I would like to think no. We have had cases in the past where the individual's been arrested. The investigation continues. They've been charged. The investigation goes on even after charging a decision, and we learn things during the course of the investigation that make it impossible to go forward. One of those things, for instance, you learn that there were text messages sent from the victim to the perpetrator the night of the rape that may have been very provocative pictures that the victim didn't tell us about. It creates issues of credibility with the victim. Certainly those pictures would come into a trial, and it makes these type of cases very difficult to prosecute when you don't know about things and you learn about them later. I would like to think that we do a good job of prosecuting those type of cases. Certainly sexual assault and sexual abuse cases are the most difficult, I think, other than homicide cases to prosecute. And I guess I'll throw domestic violence in there, too, because a lot of times you don't have a cooperative victim in domestic violence cases. But the reason they're difficult to prosecute is you have a he said, she said type of scenario. And so if you don't have other evidence, it really is going to come down to the credibility of the victim. And if the victim has credibility issues, it's going to be much more difficult to prosecute.
Thank you.
Any more? Committee? Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In a case like that, when the officer responds or the sheriff deputy responds, they usually give them a card where they can, like in a case of domestic violence, go to somewhere like Safe House or any other local group that might be able to take care of them. And then how does your office follow up with if they're being maybe led to go back home or stay in Safe House?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Representative Esquivel, once we receive a case in our office for prosecution, we obviously won't know about the victim until we get the report and the probable cause affidavit in our office. Once that comes to our office and charges are filed, we have victim witness individuals. Actually, we have two that will call that victim and get in touch with that victim immediately. We do as much advocacy as we can. I like to say I like not to call it advocacy because my victim folks are called victim witness coordinators. They're not called victim witness advocates. They will certainly point them in the right direction. They will give them referrals to where they need to go to get the help that they need. But for the most part, my victim witness coordinators are there to do just that, give the proper referrals, make sure the victim's at meetings when they need to meet with the attorneys, make sure they're at hearings when they need to be there to testify, and coordinating witnesses and victims for trials. But they do get in touch with everyone.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hastert.
A little dovetail on Senator Perkins' question on the DUIs. Do you see what's the kind of the rate of, and I've never asked about or knew about what the rate of like a public intoxication, do you see do you have a number of those floating around?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hastert, I don't have that number. If you're talking about, like, for instance, 2013 number of public intoxications, most of those don't come through my office. Most of those will go through the municipal court. So I wouldn't have those numbers. The police department could probably get those numbers for you. And then we could add them to the ones that we would get from the county.
That one always seems like, Mr. Chairman, catch 22 to me, because if someone says, well, I've had a couple drinks, so I better not drive, I start walking, I stumble, and I get picked up for public intox,
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Hastert, I can tell you that I have seen cases like that in my office, and there are times we proceed with the case, and there are times that we dismiss the case feeling that the individual made the better choice.
Yeah, I wish more people would think about that like you do. They make that choice and then they get hammered. Okay, anything else? Okay, let's do your budget, and please start with refer to the page. Start on the front end, and we'll walk through it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Obviously, front page cover sheet. We have a table of contents. The third page is really our budget at this point in time, total budget with all series. Most of that, as you will see, is going to be in the personal services 100 series, which my salary, that's salaries of all the individuals in my office.
Did you develop this budget yourself, or did you have someone internally to you and then they worked with you on it?
Well, this budget, Mr. Chairman, was worked on, and I'm not sure I exactly understand your question, but as far as...
Do you have staff internally that prepares it, and then you review and comment?
Yes, I used to. Okay. Mr. Chairman, I had a fiscal HR person in my office. I no longer have that person. Okay.
How did you come up with your base budget? Tell me what you think that means, what your base budget is.
Well, the base budget really comes from the budget office. So we work with the budget office in Fulbert Ware, who is assigned to us from the budget office to come up with our base budget. This base budget has been relatively the same for quite a number of years, other than any exception requests. As far as the base budget is concerned, it's really gone unchanged for quite a number of years.
Okay.
So as you see, that's 4.2 million. We have 20 full-time employees. Okay, page four, this is really what we do. Starts on the basic facts of what we do and what we are. As most of you know, I assume I'm one of the two district attorneys in the state of Wyoming. It requires a population of at least 60,000 in order to qualify. Obviously, counties can come together and determine to have a district attorney. No counties have chosen to do that yet. So Natrona County.
We talked about that last night, Senator Perkins. I did. Why would you, if you got Fremont, Sublette, and another county, and why would you elect a district attorney when every time it'll be coming from Fremont just because of the population issues? And I don't see that changing. I think we're going to continue with where we are for the near future. Anyway.
I think you're right, Mr. Chairman, especially as well as I know most of the county attorneys across the state.
Go ahead.
So, Natrona County and Laramie County are the two where district attorney offices reside. We do nothing but criminal matters. Going to page 5, we do nothing but criminal matters in the district attorney's office. County attorneys will do both civil and criminal matters in their particular counties, but we handle only criminal matters. Of course, that includes post-conviction relief, appeals, appeals to the district court from the circuit court, appeals from the district court up to the Supreme Court are handled by the Attorney General's office. We also deal with all the juvenile cases, whether it's neglect, whether it's chins, or whether it's delinquency. We handle all of those as well. Page 5 shows essentially the attorney and staff that at the time of the submission of this budget that I had in my office. There have been some changes, which we'll talk about shortly in the interim.
Scott, I wonder if it would be possible. If you could provide for us a breakdown of the number of employees you've had over like the last three bienniums, and if it's gone up or down for your office.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, over the last three bienniums, I do not believe I have had a new employee.
So it stayed right at 20, roughly.
I believe so. Is that right, Tolbert?
And then the other question I have, Mr. Chairman, is that would it be possible to get someone in your staff just later to provide us a spreadsheet or a document that shows the number of cases you've had over the last two or three bienniums, what they are, and plus volume, so we can see what increase or decrease there is in total number of felonies, misdemeanors. If you want to add in domestic violence, that would be good as a delineation, but it would just be, I think, useful for us and for me on the floor talking about your budget to talk about those numbers with the body.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, we can certainly do that. The DCI reports every year have those numbers. I can pull those from the DCI website for you. That would be probably as accurate as my internal numbers if I pulled it from my my case tracking system, because every time we have a resolution to a case, we have to do a report to DCI, so DCI gets all those reports and they compile
them. Mr. Chairman, do the DCI reports include the number of arrests versus acquittals versus dismissals, that type of information, or in terms of flow across your desk?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, I believe it does include arrests. I believe it does include dispositions. As far as dismissed, I'm not sure how we'd be able to pull those numbers. I don't even know if we could do that internally. It would not include, I don't believe it would include all of our juvenile cases, so that would have to come from my case tracking system. So if you could maybe give me a list of exactly what you need, I could figure out the best way to pull that.
Sure, and what I'm interested, Mr. Chairman, is just a demonstration of what your actual workload is. If you do have a bunch of cases that you dismiss or you have juvenile cases that aren't reported, then it's not a fair representation of how much work you're doing and how busy your office is in terms of, particularly if you start comparing that to other counties. As you probably know, the counties are always a little bit curmudgeon about the fact that you're paid for entirely by the state, and they're not. It'd be useful information for me if I'm confronted with that issue. So it's just, how do you demonstrate what your full workload is?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, I will try to come up with a really good representation for you the best way I can with DCI reports as well as internal reports.
Thank you. Okay, Representative Stubson.
Mr. Chairman and Scott, just looking at your staffing there, I know you have one investigator on staff, and I'm just curious, I mean, why that is. Why? I mean, you know, I always have envisioned that the department's law enforcement folks do that sort of work for you. So could you tell us a little bit what, you know, the role this investigator plays as opposed to your relationship with the police department, for example?
Scott?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, I would say this about my investigator. He's absolutely invaluable to my office. I know Casper does not have an investigator on staff. I have talked to Mr. Blonigan about this at length. I know he would love to have an investigator on staff. The reason that we feel it's important and, like I said, invaluable is that law enforcement, detectives or the street officers, you know, they're working hard every day on their caseload. There are, as we talked about, probably 350 open felony cases in my office right now. These detectives, even if it's their case, you know, we will obviously call for follow-up. But there are certain things that either they don't have time to do because of their caseload or are unable to do. And our staff investigator, and I would say this, I would say that it really comes down to who your staff investigator is. But our staff investigator, 20-year police officer here in Cheyenne, been with the DA's office, gosh, I want to say since maybe 2001, so 13 or 14 years. He knows his stuff, and he knows the people in this town, and he knows how to get results. He not only does investigations for us, he helps us prepare for trials. Another thing that detectives and police officers, I would say we would have a hard time asking them to do, and they're probably not particularly interested in helping us prepare for trials. And that includes a lot of last-minute investigations, following up with criminal histories, things of that nature. Out of all the employees in my office, I would say that would be the one that would hurt me the worst if they left at this point in time.
Okay. Continue.
Thank you. We'll just run through of the individuals from my office. The attorneys first. The DA, that's me. I had two deputy district attorneys. Things have changed. One of my deputy district attorneys is now a circuit court judge in Sweetwater County. So I lost that person. I had to do some shifting within my office. So right now I have one deputy district attorney, two assistant district attorneys, one senior district attorney, one assistant district attorney for juveniles. The senior district attorney for juveniles really runs my juvenile department. She is in a management position. She runs everything within the juvenile department and supervises the other attorney as well as the staff that are assigned to the juvenile department. Assistant district attorney for juveniles does all of the delinquencies. Assistant district attorney for misdemeanors and circuit court proceedings. And again, that's something that's changed along with the next one, which is the three-quarter time district attorney for misdemeanor and traffic DUI violations. We'll go through all that here in just a little bit. The support staff has changed somewhat as well because I no longer have the fiscal human resource officer. My legal assistant, as well as my office manager, has taken on those duties. We're going to relieve her of my legal assistant duties here as soon as we can. At the current time, she's really doing two people's jobs, and I hope to take my legal assistant work away from her as soon as I can. But we do have another legal assistant Since the fiscal person left, we converted that to a legal assistant position, a badly needed legal assistant position. And my legal assistant slash office manager now handles the fiscal human resource stuff. And I treasure her, and she is about ready to leave me, so I need to relieve her of those duties as soon as possible. And on to the next page, page six. There is a three-quarter time AWEC clerical person that we have at the front desk that helps with answering phones, as well as doing the DCI reports and a lot of data entry for the office. The next section is the grant positions that we have in my office. I've talked a little bit about that already. Full-time attorney through the VAWA grant, which is for domestic violence. They do felony and misdemeanor level. I have a part-time attorney that's down at the bottom with the Cary grant that does nothing but domestic violence cases as well. We have a grant victim assistant through the VAWA grant. As I talked about before, my HIDA attorney as well as a HIDA legal assistant. Those are all grant positions. They take on a tremendous amount of work, and as long as those grants don't dry up or go away, I will be happy. If they do, you'll potentially see me back here.
Thank you. Scott, on all those are federal grants, and is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, yes.
And so as do you have, and you, other than what you just said, do you have any feeling or you get any feedback from congressional delegation or anybody else about the likelihood or unlikelihood that those grants will continue?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, the only one that tends to be a little iffy is the Cary grant. And I think that's really only because it just depends on who is applying for that grant and getting things done in a timely manner. That's not something that's applied for through my office. That's done through other agencies, and then that money is split up between the police department, Safe House, and my office. That's the only one that's been kind of iffy. The HIDA seems very, very stable. It seems to have a lot of support in Washington. The VOCA and VAWA grants, same type of thing. Those seem to have quite a bit of support and have been fairly stable. So, and I do know HIDA, we're good for at least the next year. That's all been approved and appropriated. Let's see. It just talks about some of the other folks that are in my office that I kind of keep an eye on. We have an individual from Safe House that assists with some of the domestic violence victim contact, answering phones, things of that nature. We generally have interns through the University of Wyoming College of Law that come, and I can tell you that many of them, I'd say probably 75% of them that come through my office as interns end up prosecuting somewhere in the state when they get out of law school. They tend to really enjoy it. The rest of that is, again, just kind of things that we do with the DA's office. Protection, enforcement, obviously, proactive programs. One thing I'd like to mention goes along with Representative Stubson's question. Is the identity theft fraud in the proactive programs. My investigator does a lot of training throughout the county with the elderly, with retail groups, things of that nature, to help them recognize and prevent fraud, identity theft, and things of that nature. So that's another thing that my investigator does, and he does that on almost a I'd say twice a month. He's out doing those kinds of trainings for different individuals. On to page 7. Performance measures. It's difficult to measure due to the number of cases that come through the office. As far as conviction rates in Laramie County, they're very high. We I want to say over the course of 2013, we lost maybe three or four trials, felony jury trials. I can't say as to the misdemeanors; those are so voluminous. But conviction rates are very high through this office. Some of the other programs that we have to be involved with or choose to be involved with are listed at the bottom of page 7, the drug court program, DUI program. Laramie County, I believe, has the only veterans court program in the state right now, and that is essentially a drug court program type of program for veterans, which involves the VA and other federal agencies to assist those individuals that are veterans that may be coming back with PTSD and other issues such as that that they have to deal with and have committed a crime. And so we like to treat them in a little different manner and have a particular court set up for that.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Moniz.
Scott, yesterday we heard that PTSD symptoms are occurring with officers that investigate these child internet crimes and whatever. Do you see that as an issue, a big issue?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moniz, I do, just because I've seen these types of cases. I'm surprised the turnover rate isn't a lot higher than it is with these individuals. The types of images, thank you. You could tell, couldn't you? The types of images and people that they have to deal with on a daily basis, I think, would tend to get to anyone. They don't get to just look at these in the kind of a sterile manner. They have to view these images, and we prosecute these individuals because of these images. And even some of my attorneys, you know, I know I've talked to some of my attorneys that deal with these cases that are beginning to show some signs of having issues with it. So I do see that as a problem. I'm, again, surprised the turnover rate isn't higher. Very dedicated individuals, though.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
So how do you deal with these issues with your attorneys? Do you have a program in place, or what's your plan for dealing with these kinds of issues?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moniz, I have no particular program in place. I do encourage them to talk to someone. We don't have a budget for counseling or anything of that nature. And as the police department usually do have people like that, either on contract or on staff, my office doesn't have that. I do encourage them to go talk to someone, a counselor or whatever, if they're having any of these kind of issues. But we do discuss it within the office quite often.
One more, Mr.
Sure. Chairman.
Would there be a potential to work with the military through their program? Is that an option?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moniz, I haven't looked into that. I don't know. You know, the federal offices tend to try to keep things federal and separate and apart. But I don't know. I have not looked into that. I've thought about that before, not necessarily with the federal office, but seeing if I could get a local counselor to volunteer time to help, and I have not acted on that yet, but I'm glad you brought it up. Okay, we have what I think is one of the most successful programs in Laramie County, maybe the state, is our CHINS Educational Neglect Diversion Program. That's something that I was very, very interested in when I took office back in 2007. Essentially what we do there is we work with the school districts, and if kids are not showing up to school, no matter what their age, the school will notify us. And through our program and on DA letterhead, an individual that actually is a DFS employee will contact the parents and let them know that the DA's office is looking at this, that they need to come in for a meeting so they can discuss the reasons the child is not making it to school. Of course, this can be a 7-year-old, which most of the time is going to be a parent issue, or it can be a 15-year-old, which is obviously could be mostly kid issue. In any case, we have those families come in, we discuss the problems, and we have the ability through DFS to offer assistance and programs. And I can tell you we've seen tremendous success with this program since 2007. We're talking about 6 years later. So a kid that was, 8 years old or 9 years old back when we started this program is now 15, 16. And the overall success rate is in the neighborhood of 90 to 95%. We don't see these kids again. The DFS numbers, if you were to pull those, would reflect that as well. Our placements are way down since 2007. Our delinquencies are down since 2007. Our chins are down since 2007. So I think that this program has a tremendous impact. We have a drug diversion program. We have, of course, we work with the Joint Drug Task Force. We attend meetings every week with them. The Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, what we were talking about earlier, we meet with them on a weekly basis to discuss upcoming investigations, ongoing investigations, and prosecutions. And we assist those task force. With that, one of my deputy district attorney is a designated assistant U.S. attorney to assist federal prosecutors in those Internet Crimes Against Children cases. So if we have a case that is not so egregious as to go federal, we can prosecute them in state court. This attorney can prosecute them in state court, or they can prosecute an individual in federal court, just like the HIDTA attorney, only it's Internet Crimes Against Children. And we also are involved very heavily with the Safe Harbor Child Protection Team, and we meet weekly with this team of law enforcement, advocates. You have health professionals. You have DFS individuals all sitting around the table talking about ongoing cases, prosecutions, as well as potential upcoming cases and even just worrisome cases. So we can get a multifaceted and multidisciplinary approach on the front end to those type of cases. And again, I think that's had a tremendous impact. I have individuals that serve on many boards and different things across Laramie County as well.
Hey, Scott, one of the things we passed some legislation, I think it was a Senator Burns bill 2 or 3 years ago, and I forget the legal terminology for sure, but what it really did, you could expunge a record of a young man or woman that was convicted of a drug felony, and that they could go in after 10 years after that, and there's a litany of things that they have to, qualifications, but they could, in fact, have that removed and get their rights back. Have you seen any of those, or would you see any of those?
Mr. Chairman, actually, it's not just drug felonies. It's any felony other than those that are in the list of
right.
things
well,
that can't be expunged. I think I remember testifying at the committee that this is another unfunded mandate where we're going to be seeing these things coming through and have to respond to them and not have any extra personnel to do so. I think many of the smaller counties probably don't have an issue with that. I see many of those come through.
Tell me many. Is it 20, 30?
I would say in 2013, I probably dealt with 20 or 30 of
okay.
them. And I know we're just getting the tip of the iceberg.
How many were successful? What's a percentage, roughly?
I would say most of them, Mr.
Okay.
Chairman. Many of them I didn't object to. Some of them I did. And, of course, then it's up to the judge whether to do that or not do that.
The way that works from a legal perspective is wherever your residence is, you would go. If you're in a county where they had a county attorney, then you would do it in that county. And since you're a district attorney, people in Laramie County would come to you. That's procedural how it happens, isn't it?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. And I have to take each one of those individually. I have to go find their files in archives. I have to look at the case. I have to make a determination in my head whether I want to oppose an expungement or acquiesce to it, and then I have to draft a response to the judge in every one of those cases. And like I said, I think it's just the tip of the iceberg because it just was passed recently, and we're going to see those start to snowball.
The legislature usually doesn't do any unfunded mandates. This is probably one of the very few.
I'm sure it is.
Continue.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. You were talking about CHINs, which is kind of in your performance measures on page 7. And if I look at that, tell me if I'm understanding this right. So anyway, under the Attorney General's crime report for 2012, there were 2,942 index felonies in 2012. And that's those are felonies that come into your office. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, those are index crimes. So most of those are felonies. There's a list of what index crimes are. Most of those are felonies. I believe theft is one of the index crimes, but it could be misdemeanor theft as well. Okay. But, yes, it's 2,900 plus and mostly felonies that came through the office in 1 year.
Okay. So then if you go back on page 5, you've got down there the National Advisory Commission on Criminal Justice Standards and Goals – would say that defense attorneys' maximum cases per year should not exceed 150 felonies. So I said defense attorneys, but is it your contention that would also apply to prosecuting attorneys as far as those limitations?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, I would say that's a good bellwether, but I would also say that it's probably low or high, however you want to look at it. The reason I say that is, for the most part, defense attorneys don't have to prepare a prosecution. They don't have to meet with all the victims, all the witnesses of a case, prepare to do direct examinations and all that. That comes with the preparation of a prosecution case. They react to our case as presented. Okay, Many times they don't even put a case on.
Okay, so Mr. Chairman, when we look at that kind of standard, that would be at the far, far upper end of the number of cases a prosecutor should handle in a given year. And I think that's what you're saying.
It's saying 150 felonies, Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, 150 felonies. I would say for prosecutors it would be less than 150 that you should do in a given year. And most of my felony attorneys have, at the current time, 50 to 60 open felony cases.
Okay. So Mr. Chairman, if we've got these 2,942, and if the standard is, should be less than 150, we'll just use the 150. That would tell me that you should have 20 attorneys in your office handling those cases, and by my count, you've maybe got somewhere between 5 to 6.5, maybe, attorneys when you count yourself and the guys you've got assigned to felonies and your grand attorneys. You might have 5 or 6 that handle that caseload. Am I reading these numbers right?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, correct. I'd say we have 5 full-time felony attorneys.
Thanks.
Let's see.
Continue.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Moving on to page 8. These are the priorities, I think, of our requests, our exception requests. 1, 2, and 3, we're talking about software renewals. in priority one. Priority two is our Westlaw online research charge increase, and priority number three is our office equipment replacement. I'll go through those one at a time. I think we can skip page nine.
Yeah, go to those when they pop up in your budget, Scott.
Yeah, and those are coming up in the budget. Again, page 10 is our a base budget, and then includes our exception request and the governor's recommendations, which I do believe he's approved all of our exception requests. So we'll move on to page 11, the standard budget request. Talks about everything that we do in our office, kind of from start to finish, as far as the narrative is concerned. There are going to be some changes to a couple of these pages that I have in some handouts that you've all been given, I understand. And that goes on to page 12. Page 13, please stop me if I'm going too fast.
You're doing
questions
fine.
About anything. Page 13 kind of talks about an average, an average week in the district attorney's office, anywhere from 175 to 200 hearings per week in district, juvenile, and circuit courts. Trial stacks in felony court of up to 25 cases for each trial date. They're trying to limit those for the most part to about 12, stack of 12. But that means that my felony attorneys may have to be ready for two or three, even four cases at any one trial stack just to see which one is potentially going to go. Juvenile court is scheduled 3 days a week. Juvenile caseload includes multidisciplinary team meetings that have to happen for CHINs and delinquency cases as well as the neglect cases. Those move very quickly. There's a 48-hour detention period, and those cases need to be done relatively quickly. There are a lot of other judicially initiated legislative approved programs that we deal with on a weekly basis. Some of these, for instance, Judge Arnold's family court has kind of gone by the wayside, especially since he's announced his retirement. We do have felony drug court, we have DUI court, we have juvenile court, we have multidisciplinary juvenile screening committee, and that is a bit like Natrona County's screening of juveniles. We do it a little bit differently in our office. We attend a meeting with city individuals and go over every citation, every ticket that comes through either city court or county court with regard to juveniles to determine what the best route is for that particular individual. So that's a screening committee we use for every citation on every juvenile. The Safe Harbor Child Protection Team I've already talked about. Again, the single point of entry for all juvenile cases is the screening committee. It's along with the screening committee. They work in conjunction. The Juvenile Services Board, of which we are a member, and the Adult Community Corrections Board, of which I'm a member. There is no revenue in the district attorney's office. Page 14. I think that talks about our grants, which we've talked about already, and as you can see, the governor has approved the standard budget as submitted. And then we go on to the exception budget requests, page 15. That's the software renewals, purchases, and computer replacements, which we skipped, I believe, each of the last 2 years, and so it was approved this year.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Nicholas.
Thank you. Scott, on your computer towers and your laptops, those are more expensive than, we've got dozens and dozens of these requests through the budget system. Yours, you're obviously looking at, you must be going for a higher quality or higher brand cost or data volume. So is there any particular reason, or do you know why you pick those particular towers and docking stations?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, The things that we deal with in my office, particularly with the internet crimes against children type of cases, as well as our software that we use for case tracking that is really specific to our office, requires a high level of computer. These are ones that were recommended by our IT guy, and we have our own server in our office. We are separate from the state when it comes to IT, and we deal with, as I said before, a lot of software, a lot of new programs that come through law enforcement. For instance, just this year, the Sheriff's Department are getting those body cams, which you may have seen on television. So there's a digital video recorder on every officer as they make every stop. They have specific software to that, which then we have to have in order to play those. And so these are the ones that were recommended for those types of things.
Go ahead. Turn your mic on.
Page 16, you've got an increase of $9,000 for Westlaw. I note that Blonigan doesn't have that. Do you have Westlaw for every attorney, or do you have Westlaw stations so you can share Westlaw? So how does that work? And why is it different than Blonigan's?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, I'm not sure why it's different than Blonigan's. I don't know what he's got as far as a setup. Every attorney in my office has access to Westlaw. It's not, we don't give access to we don't have separate access for the legal assistants or the paralegals, so it's just the attorneys that have access. But each one does have a license for that. We don't have any kind of special plan. We simply have the Wyoming plan. So we have access to Wyoming case law, federal case law, you know, Wyoming state and federal cases. And any additional research we need to do that goes outside that plan, we have to pay extra for, and it's quite expensive. I believe that this was put in by my former fiscal officer because she anticipated a 5% increase for the biennium, which has been the norm over the time we've had Westlaw.
Okay, thank you. And then one follow-up, Mr. Chairman. Going down to priority number 3 on your office equipment, you talk about chairs in your conference room. Do you have access to the state supply warehouse where they've got desks, chairs, things like that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, I believe we do have access to that. I don't know what the cost would be there. I can tell you that this conference room that we're looking for these chairs for ends up with the chairs that come from people's desks that were either broken or overused, and they all make their way to this conference room. So we have approximately 10 to 12 chairs in this conference room that have, and none of them look like the others. And so we were looking to match all the chairs.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. We're going to.
Slip covers.
Senator Perkins, you got something?
No, sir.
Are we looking for chairs? I think we know where there's going to be some.
I'll be halfway there.
Okay, continue.
Thank you. As you can see, those three requests have been approved by the governor, including the computer, which is already, want to make sure, gone through the OCIO and approved.
How's your relationship been with ETS?
Mr. Chairman, good.
Do they rubber stamp what you want, or do they ask some good questions?
You know, generally, they'll ask a few questions, but and we were cut back because we used to do half of our computers 1 year and then half of our computers the next year, and we'd keep flip-flopping, and they cut us back on that, to where we haven't had any new computers for a couple of years, so that's why we're asking for some now.
Any other questions? Continue.
Thank you. Page 18 is, as you can see, the general budget with the codes, the exception requests in the particular areas, and the total budget of $4,219,518. And again, that's some of the things I want to go over with.
Let's get into that one position. Is that what you're going to do now?
That one position. Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, go ahead.
The one position that that I talked about earlier was a three-quarter time misdemeanor position. There is an email that I sent to Chairman Bebout, which I think you all have been copied with, to kind of explain what happened with regard to that position. There was, as I said, my fiscal HR person left the office rather abruptly. My legal assistant, office manager, said she could take on those duties, but of course she didn't have a lot of experience in those areas. And there was a lot of shifting going on in my office, not just because of the HR person leaving, but because of the attorney that left for judgeship. So there was some shifting there, and usually when I shift in my office, I tend to promote from within and try and find somebody to fill the slot that opens up at the bottom. So there's a lot of shifting going on there. At the same time, my three-quarter time attorney had been with my office even before it was a district attorney's office. As a county attorney's office, he'd been there for 33 years, retired from my office. So that left a gap and a lot of HR type of work to be done. We went to A&I for assistance. We asked for that three-quarter time position to be moved to a full-time position and for it to be moved from an attorney two position to an attorney one position, an entry-level position. We were informed that our request had been approved. It was advertised through HR as a full-time position. We had an individual in mind with the public defender's office that was full-time with the public defender's office. They accepted the position, came on board, and approximately 3 to 4 weeks later, around the time we needed to start paying this individual, we learned that our position was still three-quarter time and not actually full-time. I went to the governor's office. Carrie Jo Gray worked very hard with the necessary individuals to get a temporary B-11 so that we could keep this full-time person on at my office. A little bit by way of explanation, the 33-year veteran really was able to handle a tremendous caseload of misdemeanors just due to his experience level in dealing with judges, dealing with all the officers, everyone that knew him. I knew it was going to be more of a challenge for a new person and needed that position to be full-time instead of three-quarter time. We thought we had the appropriate, authorization. Turns out there was a misunderstanding. We did not have the appropriate authorization. As I said, Carrie Jo Gray worked hard to get us a proper B-11 to continue the full-time attorney through June 30th of this year. So what I'm here to ask you for as a committee is that additional quarter-time position because I will need that for the 2015-2016 budget. As you can see, if you read this email, and by way of my explanation, this was simply a mistake that happened, and we weren't trying to put one over on anybody and get a full-time position out of a three-quarter time position. We thought we had the authorization. We did not. The next thing in your packet is what would be an amended page 5 to our biennium budget request, where you can see now includes the full-time position. So now we have 19 full-time.
Scott, could you hold on a second?
Sure. We don't have that.
We don't have the packet.
We've got the original letter. Yeah, we got that.
This is not attached?
Yeah, we got it.
Okay, that's what I'm looking at. I'm sorry. Okay, it's page 5 of the original biennium budget request, but it is page 3 in your packet. Okay, so this attachment shows the 19 full-time positions that we no longer have the one full-time position, the AWEC position, and now we have 8 full-time attorneys. Again, it goes down. It shows you the quarter-time position is deleted and one assistant district attorney for misdemeanor traffic DUI violations. Now, because of that move from the fiscal HR person and converting that to a legal assistant, we have 6 legal assistant administrative assistants, and we have deleted the fiscal human resource officer. Page 4 of your packet, which is the revised page 2 of the biennium budget request, simply shows you the fact that we are currently staffed, and this is, again, through the temporary B11, with 9 full-time attorneys, deleting the part-time attorney and the human resource officer, and we now have 6 legal assistants. We've put in there that through the B11 process approved December 19, 2013, we obtained that additional quarter time, so the part-time position was moved to a full-time position. And the rest of that is just the changes that go along with that.
Scott, that's revenue. Is it revenue neutral?
It is actually revenue negative, and I'll go into that here momentarily, which your next 2 pages, I guess it'd be 5 and 6 of your packet, are a spreadsheet that we put together of our
so the total salary savings is a 74.5, right?
Yes.
That's because of the 33-year-old's position. He was a level 3 or whatever, and now you have a level 1?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. He was a level 2. We've moved to a level 1. We're paying them at a significant lower rate than we were paying even the three-quarter time position. You can see the budgeted amount that we have here, and this is just our position and the $3.7 million.
Scott, we're gonna
have to move along.
Yeah, we're gonna have to cut this short. We got something else. I think we understand that. And committee, I want to apologize to Scott a little bit. I overreacted a little bit when I heard this, but then I realized who I was dealing with and knowing you like I have for a long time. My being upset was probably short-sighted, so thanks for doing this, and I understand it perfectly well. Now, any questions on this committee? Senator Meyer.
We didn't know you were upset.
Scott, I'm just looking at you. You still have a three-quarter-time AWAC clerical person. Does that AWAC clerical person get benefits? Is my question.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, no, that's an unbenefited position.
It's an unbenefited. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. We've got to wrap this up. Anything else you have, Scott?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Don, prepare this as an amendment, would you, for the committee to look at? Any other questions, committee, of Scott? Any other questions? Scott, I don't anticipate a callback. Thank you very much for your service to our state. We appreciate your hard work. And you're removed or released, or you can do whatever you want. Go back, take on all those cases.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day. Okay, committee. I think, Don, we probably should get ready and start heading over. It's the Hersler Building.
Mr. Chairman, it's B63 right through the tunnel on the basement level.
Basement. Okay, let's, we ought to head over there now. Okay. We got seats.